Welcome to this episode of the Thought Cloud Podcast. I'm your host, Amy Al-Khatib, and today I'll be talking with Anthony Ginello. He is the Senior Solutions Engineer for Critical Environments Groups. Anthony, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So Anthony has been involved with delivering airflow management and data center optimization products for over 15 years. And he's worked on both large and small data centers, including colocation facilities, with the focus on energy efficiency and the importance of using best practices for airflow management. I asked him to come on the show today so I could pick his brain about some of the real life experiences that he's witnessed in implementing these strategies. And with that, Anthony, when you first go on site to assess an opportunity for optimization that might include airflow management, what are some of the first things that you'll look for to determine that?
Well, the very first things that I look at is how the AC or air conditioning from the crack units or air handlers are being distributed throughout the data center. I'm looking at how the airflow goes, whether it's using raised floor or if it's being ducted or whatnot, and how it's making its way to each of the target devices inside the racks. And just as importantly, I take a look at the return path, making sure that there's a direct path of some sort for the hot exhaust air to make its way back to returns on the crack units. Whether there's restrictions or blockages and so on kind of determines the ways that I go about designing a containment system for these data centers.
Okay, and then a common thing that we hear is the importance of matching the cooling capacity to the IT load, using watts as a common metric. But I recently took a CNET training program to become a certified data center design professional, and I realized it's really not that easy. It's not one-to-one. So
it's not. It's not at all.
But you probably will do a much better job of explaining it. So can you talk about how you actually go about gathering that information and determining that calculation?
Well, for capacity alone, just how much air that you're actually making. There's a high level kind of conversion. It's usually like 3.52 watts per ton of air. However, that changes greatly when it comes to airflow distribution. And there's other things that kind of play a role in that too, such as altitude and whatnot.
And so when you're doing that conversion, is that a standard for most all manufacturers, or does it kind of depend on the unit that you're using, or any sort of different structural differences?
Well, it can get real complicated real quick, actually. But if you're just looking at high level amount that you're actually capacity that you're actually making, that's a pretty decent number. But when it comes to distribution, it gets much more involved. Just to give you some ideas, there's actually four parts of airflow that determine whether or determine its ability to cool a given IT load. The first one that we're mostly, you know, mostly used to is temperature, or the temperature of the air. The next is the water content, typically represented in relative humidity. Pressure. Pressure is a very big one that most people don't pay a whole lot of attention to, such as altitude. Altitude could play a big part in pressure. So what's good for a data center at sea level, let's say in New Jersey, is not going to fly when you go up to altitude at a place like Denver or so on. And then the last one is the quantity, how much airflow you're actually producing along with those other three. Any one of those things change, you have to make up the difference with one of the others. So for example, if you drop pressure, you have to add either a lower inlet, a lower temperature inlet and have a broader temperature change, or you have to add more quantity of air, typically measured in CFM. Just to give you an idea, for most data centers, the target change in temperature, let's say if it goes across a piece of equipment, is right around 20 degrees change Fahrenheit. So if it goes in at 60, it comes out at 80. That's a good determining factor. And a big reason for that is because most crack units are rated at a 20 degree delta T. So and actually, the majority of the capacities for crack units are rated with a 85 degree return air temperature. So if you're doing less than 85 degrees return air temperature, you're actually not making as much capacity as what the unit itself is rated for. So those are some of the things that we kind of target for. One other example, if you're at sea level, let's say, and you're supplying a 65 degree inlet air temperature to a piece of equipment, you're going to need roughly 157 CFM of airflow to equal that 20 degree rise and change of temperature. And ultimately, our goal is to get as hot of a temperature back to those air conditioners as possible to eke out the most efficiency. On average, it's right around for every degree Fahrenheit that you increase the return air temperature, you're going to gain somewhere around 4% in efficiency.
Yeah, that was another interesting thing I learned in that class that I recently took that, you know, kind of explained, even though I think the concept of IL containment made sense before, it made a lot more sense finding out that the units are more efficient when they have hotter air coming into them. I would think that that made them work harder and to be less efficient, but it's turns out it's the opposite of what I thought.
Yeah, it's very much the opposite. To be honest with you, when you put a return or when you return a hotter air temp, it increases the refrigerant temperature, and the refrigerant is actually easier for the compressors to pump at a hotter temperature than they are at a colder temperature. And that's where you get a lot of that efficiency at.
So once you take into account all of the unique characteristics of the particular data center that you're working on and you get the initial sizing, what goes into your decision when you're thinking about whether or not an IL containment solution would benefit this particular customer? And once you've decided that, how do you determine whether it's hot or cold IL containment that would be best?
Well, I'm gonna tackle the second part of that first. One of the things that I kind of go with is if the data center is utilizing a return air plenum, I almost always go with a hot IL containment and maximize the utilization of that return air plenum. By return air plenum, I mean that they're using the ceiling very much like how you would use a raised floor. So they'll have a suspended ceiling, and then they'll have placed grates in the suspended ceiling. Typically located above hot aisles, and then the crack units or whatever type of air conditioning that they have, the returns of those units are actually ducted into that same space above the suspended ceiling. Whenever we come across data centers that don't have them and we create an implementation of a return air plenum, we notice a huge increase in efficiency and effectiveness with the cooling. So right off the bat, if they have a return air, a return ceiling plenum, I'm almost always going to go with a hot aisle containment. Now, as far as some of the other things that to take into account, ducted data centers, one of the things that I noticed with data centers are using ducted cold air into their space, which is typically associated with a slab floor, but not always, but typically most slab floors use ducted air. I noticed that there's restrictions with the quantity of air that you can get through a duct. And unfortunately, it doesn't lend itself to a very flexible data center when it comes to changing capacities. We run into a lot of customers who run into that same kind of scenario where they duct air into a space. Then next thing they know that they increase the capacity of kilowatt IT load inside a given aisle. And they're having a hard time getting the proper amount of CFM, or in this case, what I call mass airflow. Mass airflow takes into account those four parts of cooling that I mentioned earlier, the temp, humidity, pressure, quantity. If they're not getting the proper amount of mass airflow into that space, they're not going to be able to cool that IT load, and the ductwork kind of restricts them. Again, that's something that we come across a lot. So that's really going to kind of determine whether I go with a hot and cold aisle, because if they're really restricted with the amount of cold air that they can get into a cold aisle, the last thing you want to do is contain that space. So it's best to have the rest of the data center, you're essentially your cold aisle, and then contain the hot. So whatever that aisle might not be able to make up, provision-wise into that cold aisle space, it could take from the rest of the room. But if we were to do the opposite and actually contain that space, the only air that those IT servers can, or IT equipment can pull air from is whatever you're supplying into that contained space. And that can lead itself to a bad situation real quick.
Okay, and then whether we're talking about hot or cold aisle containment, once you've decided the layout that you're going for, what are some of the typical issues that you run into when you're actually implementing this strategy?
All right. Well, for legacy data centers, there's a lot. some of the typical legacy data center issues or places that have kind of been operating for years, you'll notice that you'll get all sorts of different type of cabinets that go in there. They're different size racks. Some of them come with their, like, you'll see some of the IBM or EMC racks that are different sizes and then also flow air in different ways. I've seen EMC racks that flow air in from the front and then up through the top. Some are actually even have some sections that are reverse. So we have to take into account how we're going to go and essentially like level off the playing field and cover all these different racks of different heights and varying sizes, utilizing different means of blanking out spaces or creating panels that go in between or above or below them. And sometimes we even we built essentially like a framework around the entire aisle and then put a roof on it and then kind of filled in the empty spaces. Some of the other problems that we come across are gaps in the aisles as well, where they'll either be missing a piece of equipment or they'll have an odd shaped piece of equipment that was in there at one point and then ended up being pulled out. So we have to fill in those areas. And then the most common thing that we come across is the end of the rows aren't even. So you'll have one row that's slightly shorter than the other. So it's not like you could just put a door right across them. We have to actually make up that space. And ideally what we're trying to do is we're trying to get everything into a uniform height, a uniform length and width so that we can actually put doors, panels, and so forth onto them. Some of them are pretty simple to do and fix. Others, like I said before, we actually have to create almost like a framework around them and then build off that framework. One of the more difficult ones that we had was one data center that had a typical enclosed four-post rack on one side, but on the other side they had two post racks. And then they had cabling coming out from the two post racks going up in front of the rack and above and into the ladder racking. So you can't necessarily put a top panel or something like that on there to kind of enclose that space. So we ended up making a framework all around those panels or all around those two post racks and the entire aisle and actually use brush grommet off the framework to the face of those two post racks, which made contact with the cabling and so on and kind of sealed off the space, but still allowed the customer to continue to do their cabling the way that they were doing it through the brush grommet.
So with most data centers, I feel like everybody is planning for growth. Like, no, I don't think there's anybody out there that's thinking this is what we're going to do and this is what we're going to do forever. So when it comes to some of the things that go into that are easy to consider. If you have a certain amount of equipment today and you're planning on growing two or three times, you can buy a space that can, you know, the amount of square feet can fit that. But some of the things are, you know, more complicated than that, where you might have thought that you had growth in mind, but then you realize this and this and this don't work well together. So when it comes to containment, do you take growth into consideration or are you building just for what is there? And when growth comes, that will just become another aisle?
We do. We actually do take growth into consideration. For example, we'll have some data centers where they'll have an entire one row finished off, and then they're starting to grow into the next row to create to form an aisle. But the aisle's not exactly entirely formed yet, but they still want the efficiency at the right now for, you know, that's associated with containment. So what we'll do is we'll create a wall essentially. But the wall that we put up is typically done in section or with sections that that correspond with the average width of the racks that they standardized on. So essentially, if they bring in another rack of their standard rack width, they could just pull out that one section of wall and put the rack right into there. So to give you an example, if they standardize on a 25 or a 24 inch wide rack, we would make the wall in 24 inch sections and then they can just pull out each section and pop in a new cabinet. So we do take growth into consideration very much so. And we also work with the customer on the provisioning part too. We help them make the right decisions as far as proper provisioning into those spaces. We run the numbers with them. We also have the tools in our kit to do measuring of airflow as well as IT load.
Okay, and then my last question for you, Anthony, from an implementation standpoint, what major things would you advise for customers to have in place ahead of time in order to make sure that their installation goes quickly and smoothly, you know, obviously to avoid any outages as possible?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, let's get into some real talk here. So first and foremost, they should try and get as many best practices done ahead of time as possible. So if there's blanking panels and stuff that are required into the space, you're not really going to eke out the efficiency until you get that those things into place. So you might as well do it right then and there ahead of time. The other thing is cleaning up any kind of cabling on the backside of the racks. Don't just have huge waterfalls of cable coming down. If you can't reach in and touch the fans on your IT equipment, chances are the air is not going to be able to get out as easily as it should be. The next is clean up the place. Create an area that allows us to work. Don't have boxes and materials all over the place and then ask us to come in there and do work, which requires us to move those things. You know, the less that we have to move, the less chance of something wrong happening. One of the big things I would have to say is simplify the logistics as much as possible. You know, like lay out all the requirements that are in place for us to work, whether it has to do with a certificate of insurance, COVID requirements these days, security requirements, smoke detection. A lot of our customers prefer us to have the fire and smoke put on standby while we're doing actual work. Supply us a proper contact information of whoever's going to be on location. This way that we can actually make contact with that person when we arrive and minimize the amount of time it takes for us to actually get in and get into place. Another thing that helps out too is allowing us to have a place to work on the outside to kind of stage equipment, or if we have to do any kind of cutting or anything along those lines, to have a place for us, you know, with power that allow us to, that we can go into and do some sort of cutting or whatnot and not have to bring anything into the data center. And lastly, have provisions, you know, in place for us, you know, to take care of trash or recycling and so on. We're more than happy to clean up our mess and throw the stuff away and compact it, but we need a place to put it on out. Typically need a place to put it.
A lot of those things, I think, you know, like blanking plates and not having stuff on the floor and cleaning up the cables are definitely things that people should be doing all the time, not just when somebody is coming in to work, but probably if you're talking real life, that's not actually what's going on. So just for any listeners out there who maybe want to consider that, even if you're not having a renovation done on your data center, but that all sounds pretty simple. And I think you shared some really great information today, Anthony, mm-hmm. And it might seem like a pretty simple topic and something that we've heard about for a long time, hot and cold aisle containment, but I don't know the exact number. Maybe you do. I was pretty surprised to find out how many data centers haven't already implemented this very popular and energy efficient strategy, but there's a big number.
I can tell you, it definitely keeps us busy. I think we're backed up, or we have about 15 projects on online right now, especially since the COVID stuff kind of hit and it kind of delayed us. But I think the word's definitely getting out there, and we're seeing big efficiency gains with our customers, and our customers seem extremely happy afterwards at how fast they can make changes in their data center once these things are implemented.
Well, that's really awesome, and I appreciate all the information you're sharing with us. For the listeners out there, CEG has contributed several articles on the topic of airflow management. I will tag some of them in the description of this podcast so you could see some of that, and I know that the company itself is doing some webinar series, so there's information out there. I really appreciate your time today, Anthony. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Sure thing, and thanks for having me, Amy.
And for everybody listening, tune in next time to another episode of the Thought Cloud Podcast.